passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another Baseball America Draft Podcast. I'm Carlos Collazo, joined by Peter Flaherty. As always, we're recording this right after the Rangers won the World Series in five games against the D-backs. It's the morning of November 2nd on Thursday as we record this. Peter, how are you doing, man?
I'm doing excellent. It was a fun World Series. I think you nailed your prediction. I know you said the Rangers, but I don't know if it was in five or six.
I said in five, but I'm going to just go ahead and be honest. It's a completely random guess, and I'm not going to take any credit for it other than luck. So if you want to give me credit for it, that's great, but it is entirely undeserved on my part, I think.
Well, I'll absolutely give you credit for it because it's pretty impressive. The World Series is always fun to watch, no matter who's playing, no matter how many games it goes. The Rangers they were firing all cylinders. Corey Seager was outstanding in all facets of the game. They were super impressive. So a very great showing for them that ends with their first World Series title in franchise history. And then for the D-backs, the Cinderella team of the postseason, I know that they were very ahead of schedule and, making it here, but they've got a fun young core to build around, and I think that the future is pretty bright.
Yeah. What would you give this postseason, the entirety of the postseason, a grade on the 20-80 scale?
Ooh.
I'm trying to decide between a 40 and a 45, but it's only because I feel like the last few years prior to this one was just explosive in every round. This year it felt like the opening round was kind of lukewarm, a bunch of 2-0 sweeps. The second round across the board I thought was a lot of fun, and then the World Series wasn't quite as competitive as maybe we've had in recent years. So I think I might go 40, but that feels a little pessimistic. I will say this, like any baseball postseason compared to whatever else you could be watching is going to be a 70 or an 80, but relative to the norm for MLB's postseason, I might go 40.
I think I'm with you on the 40. Like, every wild card was a sweep, and then the DSs weren't as exciting. And then you get it started really slow, and then it made up for it in the CS. Both went seven, and then the World Series kind of back to the.
Yeah. If we just had a few more competitive games in the World Series, I think it could have pushed me to a 45. Obviously, that would have been really cool. But it just felt like, in general, fewer competitive series. And before people go crazy on me, I don't think it's a below average grade because we didn't have the biggest market teams in the World Series. I like the fact that we had some new faces and some new jerseys in the World Series. I think it's cool for the sport. And I think a lot of the TV rating stuff is pretty overblown in general, just considering general TV rating trends overall. Like us millennials and you Zoomers, Peter, aren't really getting cable subscriptions these days.
Exactly. I'm strictly YouTube TV nowadays.
Yeah. All right, cool. So that's my World Series take for the podcast, and we can get straight into draft stuff unless you've got something else you want to say before we talk some more players.
No, I'm ready to hop in.
Sweet. So today we are looking at players number 16 through 20 on our 2024 Top 100 board. I'm excited about this episode because I can just kind of sit back and let Peter carry us. It's four college players to just one high school player. But I think a lot of these players are interesting. It's really different profiles for every single player that we're going to talk through. today. Various strengths and weaknesses, defensive profiles. Yeah, and interesting players. Players I think who probably, maybe collectively across the board, could be higher on our list on our next update. But we can get into that as we dial through each player. But first up, we have Stanford catcher Malcolm Moore. He's a draft-eligible sophomore this year. Entered the 2023 season as one of the best pure hitters in the incoming freshman class. Lived up to that reputation. He hit 311, 386, 564 with 15 homers, 20 doubles for Stanford in his freshman season. What are your thoughts on Malcolm Moore, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, you hit on it. Was probably the highest touted freshman, I'd say, who made it to campus and probably the one that people are most excited about heading into last season. Freshman All-American, as you said, at 311 with 20 doubles, 15 home runs, and then a 63 RBI, ranked third on a really good Stanford team that made it to Omaha. I think the biggest question mark with him was his catching and his ability behind the plate. And I think that for a true freshman who caught every day on a really good team and a really, really good pitching staff, I thought he handled himself fine back there. I mean, it was only 9 pass balls throughout 10 of, I think, 38 base stealers, which I thought, you know, it's a respectable mark. The receiving still needs work. I think his overall setup back there still needs work. I'm not like a huge anti like one knee guy. Like I'm not in that camp. I just don't know how well it works for him on some of his throws. He looked rushed. They were inaccurate at times, but the calling card with him obviously is the bat. And it's interesting. He's got one of the most unorthodox setups in the plate in college baseball. It's kind of a one of one setup. Mm-hmm. His front side is basically completely open and the opposing pitcher can basically just see the Stanford across his chest. And it's a series of like small toe taps almost that like leads into a bigger toe tap. Mm. And it's so weird looking, but I mean, it works. I wouldn't really mess with it. There's present bat speed. He's got obviously plus power, big time plus power to the pull side. I'd say at this point he's a fastball hitter. I think there were times where he struggled to pick up spin, 88% overall contact rate against fastballs, and then a 96% in zone contact rate against fastballs. And then there were some swing and miss concerns and expanding the zone against spin, but really impressive bat. I think that the catching and the defense, it's going to continue to take a step forward as he heads into his sophomore year, and just a big time pure hitter that, you know, we talk about all the time, that catchers who can hit are at a premium. And, you know, I think the middle of the first round is a good spot for him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I thought coming into last year that Moore would be a guy who quickly moved off the position at catcher. Just looking back at our high school reports and feedback from scouts at the time, people made it seem like an inevitability that he was moving off catcher and moving to first. He was a big physical player. He never really moved well behind the plate in high school. His arm grade also backed up a little bit. But kind of like what you were saying, it sounds like he was better than advertised behind the dish, even if he's still a bat first catcher. If you can do enough just to stick there and have the bat profile, that obviously helps your overall value out quite a bit. The secondary swing and miss concerns are really interesting with Moore. I'll be curious how he addresses that, because just hearing the fastball contact rate that you mentioned and then looking at his secondary contact rate, I mean, he had a 41% miss rate against all secondary types per synergy, which is extremely high. The chase rate is also quite a bit higher there. So I'm not sure if it's some sort of a pitch recognition issue, if it has to do with just all the moving parts in his operation. Like, he has to kind of get set up for the fastball with all that moving parts. So maybe he's just out in front too early and has to make a decision too soon on the secondary pitches. But you're right, he does have a lot of bat speed. The fact that he can get in good launch position for those fastballs and for good velocity fastballs is solid. I imagine we're going to hear a lot about his swing over the next 6 months or so, and whether or not he needs to make adjustments, whether or not that'll work in pro ball. You hear every year there's a few players that have kind of an unorthodox swing Nolan Shanwell. Obviously, it's worked for him. So until they start not hitting or not performing with an unusual setup, I'm not too concerned about it. But it will be interesting to hear like what scouts are thinking about that this spring, what adjustments he makes. I mean, do you think if he moves off catcher, he's still a first-round talent, Peter? Do you think the bat and the power is that impressive? Or how would that positional change impact your evaluation of him?
I mean, the bat is legit for sure. Gosh, that's a great question. Because I think if you look, you know, elsewhere on the board at some of these potentially bat first catchers, one guy that I talked about a little while ago, obviously, Kevin Bazell from Texas Tech, an interesting one, Jacob Cozart, Caleb Lomavita, not saying they're all bat first, but it's a pretty good crop of catchers. And if you, you know, if a team views Malcolm Moore as a first base, like corner outfield type, I think it's definitely a hit to his stock a little bit. But I don't know how long you can pass up on that offensive profile. So I think he's more of a, would be more of a later first round, early second round type. If he were to move off catcher, but I think that at least to start, whatever organization drafts him is going to try and work on the catching and get him as polished as possible back there and get the most out of him because, you know, I think it's worth a shot. But as you said, the arm grade, I'd probably, you know, it's average. There were a couple that I thought were maybe a tick above. The best throw of his season was actually the last throw of his season. It came in Omaha against Tennessee. It was I mean, throughout a potential base stealer, it was really low, right on the money. Carried through the base. It was a nice kind of end to his season. So I think if he can just refine the actions a little bit back there and get a little bit more mobile, it's going to go a long way. I just think that the overall package, it just needs refining defensively. But as we've said, the bat is legit. And with the pitch recognition stuff, I think that you hit on it. The first thing that people are going to point to is that operation. I thought it was a great point where, you know, he's got to be on time for the fastball, which is probably what was drilled into his head with like having this swing. It's like, hey, you know what? You've got all these moving parts. Like, you know, don't get beat by a fastball. And with that, you know, maybe he's a little bit out front. Maybe he struggles picking up spin out of the hand. So I'm curious to see if it looks the exact same in the box or if he's, you know, cleaned it up a little bit.
Yeah, seeing how that changes will be something I'm watching for next year, just watching him against secondary stuff to see if I can figure out like what exactly is the issue. Is it a mechanical issue? Is it just a pitch recognition general issue? But I think it's also worth pointing out, too, that catcher defense, it feels like catcher defense from the amateur ranks to professional baseball is the biggest sort of gap in our evaluation and just the polish that players are able to add, the coaching you get, the amount of reps you get when you're in a pro system, not worrying about school, really focusing on that full time, getting very good instruction at the position. There are a lot of players who kind of exceed our expectations for catcher defense and surprise us. So, yeah, you can't write it out. And certainly whoever selects him will be trying him out at the position because that bat is pretty fearsome if he's in your lineup as an everyday catcher. Any final thoughts on Moore before we move on?
No, I think we touched on him perfectly.
Cool. All right, next guy is Seaver King, a shortstop, second base, third baseman. Really can play all over the infield. He's going to be joining a very strong Wake Forest team this spring after two really loud seasons with Division II Wingate in North Carolina. I think he was the talk of the summer for the college class in a lot of respects. He hit 411, 457, 699 with 11 home runs, 13 stolen bases in 2023. At that Division II level, he looked really good in the Cape Cod League. He played with Team USA, looked good there. He's just this twitchy, fast, hitterish middle infield type that has a lot of defensive versatility, I would imagine. I would love to see him play shortstop all spring. It doesn't sound like that's at least the plan for Wake Forest next year, Peter, but what are your thoughts on Seaver King? I know he's a bit of a personal favorite for you. You were very high on him before I knew much about him at all. So talk us through Seaver King.
Yeah, so he is one of my personal favorites. I got tipped off on him last spring, around April or so. Was the best player at the Division II level last spring. He hit 411 with 20 doubles, 11 home runs, and 53 RBIs. I think his max exit velo
was 112, 113. And then, as you mentioned, he earned a spot on Team USA, which I can't remember the last time a Division II guy earned a spot on USA's final roster. He obviously got a camp invite, but he made the final team, which is very impressive. And then he also tore up the Cape League in a brief 16-game stint he had there. He hit 424 with 5 extra base hits, 9 RBIs, almost as many walks as he had strikeouts. Just super, super athletic. It's a really explosive operation in the box. He's got a low handset, thunderous bat speed, double plus bat speed. I'd say there's above average power to the pull side, but he's got advanced bat to ball skills. He had an 88% in zone contact rate between the Cape and Team USA, which, at least when kind of digging in on the nitty gritty with King, I'm more focused on the Cape and USA as opposed to Wingate, just because that's going to be the type of talent he sees in the ACC and obviously going forward. But he's a plus runner. He's turning 70 run times at on occasion. And then I think that the biggest question mark with him is the position. He's had time at second, short, third. He played all over the infield at USA, but I think his speed and athleticism would translate really well in center field. And that's where he's gotten some run this fall for Wake, and the reviews have been positive defensively. So if he can show that he's a pro level center fielder, I mean, the ceiling as to where he's selected in the draft, I think it increases just that much more. We have him at 17. I mean, I think that the ceiling would then be, you know, top 15, top 10 type, but he's a really fun overall player. It's a fun profile. He's shown really well with the bat this fall too for Wake. I think I'm looking at the analytics Twitter account, at least, which is great. He's got 4 or 5 home runs, including one in a game against Elon. So he hasn't missed a beat in the transition from Division II to a high level D1 program. So I'm really excited about him.
Yeah, it feels like this is a guy who just hits no matter where he's at. So far, that's been the case. His track record is excellent. I am excited for him moving to the ACC. He's going to face quite a bit more velocity. But if you look at just a small sample of 92-plus mile-per-hour pitches that he's seen, his production versus velocity is impressive. It's only 73 pitches that we have in synergy of that velocity, but he's hit 350, 381, 500. It's an 82% contact rate against that pitch, which is probably above average. The one thing that I see in his profile, just kind of looking at the data, looking at all the numbers, is he maybe chases a little bit too much. But I could also see him being just such an advanced hitter at that Division II level, to where he's kind of fine just expanding the zone because he knows he can do damage on a variety of pitches at that level. I'll be curious if his approach, like how he adjusts his approach to more consistent high-end pitching in the ACC, what that chase rate looks like over a 2024 season. Are there any obvious like holes in his profile? You said maybe the defensive profile is the biggest question, but that question seems to be more about like where is he best suited as an everyday player, rather than we're not sure if he can play these positions, if that makes sense. Like, it almost feels like a positive that he can move around so many positions rather than a negative. Are there any like obvious question marks that you still have in the profile that you'd like to be answered next spring?
I think with the defense, I think that was a perfect way to sum it up. I think it's less so like, oh, Seaver King can't play short or he can't play second. It's more so he can play center field, which just kind of adds to his versatility. And I think that Wake unlocking that and sticking him out there and just letting him use his speed, his athleticism, and just letting him run around is going to be really beneficial. You mentioned it. He does have the tendency to, you know, expand the strike zone, chase against spin, but it hasn't been anything, at least to this point, that's really hindered his production, hindered his game. So I'd say maybe a little bit in the approach, there's a little bit to tighten up, but other than that, there isn't a whole lot to kind of poke a hole.
Yeah. Yeah, it's easy to get really nitpicky for a guy who's hit over 400 seemingly for his college career. So we're waiting for him to fail for the first time. We'll see what happens. But no, he's a fun player. He's electric to watch. His hands working in the box are fun. Watching him just take off from home plate is a lot of fun too. So he is a fun player. I can't imagine what this Wake team is going to look like. I have very high expectations for that program, just the amount of talent they have. and him in that ballpark too. I imagine he's going to put up some. I mean, for anyone watching college baseball who's tuned in, it maybe is not surprising when a Wake Forest player puts up big home run totals. But just looking at him physically and seeing the home run totals he could wind up with at the end of the year might surprise some people who maybe aren't aware that the Wake is a very friendly hitter's park.
I was going to say, and looking at him, you might not guess it, but there's 20 home run upside with King. And with that, there'll be 20 home run, 20 stolen base upside. Like he's that good and that much of a dual threat.
Yeah. So that's Seaver King. Definitely one to watch out for. Maybe not a household name in college baseball just yet, but probably will be pretty quickly. Maybe a bigger name in terms of the production and performance on a national level is Charlie Condon, first baseman, corner outfielder at Georgia. He had one of the best freshman seasons in the country. He was named Baseball America's Freshman of the Year after he slugged over 800, hit 25 home runs. His overall slash line was 386, 44, 800. Again, 25 homers, 10 doubles. He struck out 17% of the time, walked 13% of the time. So really just fantastic offensive numbers overall. He also played with USA Baseball's team this summer. I got to see him a little bit. He's a big physical player, 6'6", 211 pounds, has some long levers, a little bit of length in the swing that can lead to some swing and miss, but it's a pretty solid all-around offensive profile, and he's got the power to leave the yard from foul pole to foul pole. So what are your thoughts on Charlie Condon, Peter?
Yeah, I mean, he exploded onto the scene last year. He missed all of 2022. He got some experience in the Northwoods League in the summer of 2022 where he showed well. But you hit on it last year. He had 386, 10 doubles, 25 home runs, 67 RBI as a redshirt freshman. Our freshman of the year was on Team USA. I mean, the calling card, obviously, with him as the bat, it's super loose, easy swing. Big-time bat speed. You mentioned it there. It gets a little bit long at times, but I think similar to Nick Kurtz a little bit from the left side at 6'6", Condon's overall operation and swing, I'd say, is almost uniquely compact and explosive for someone of, you know, him and Kurtz's size. I really like the hand action. There's big time buggy whip, super loose. Barrel really gets moving through the hitting zone. And then there's plus borderline double plus power to all fields, especially to the pull side. Definitely double plus. And I'd also say the pure hit tool is a borderline six, and there's above average bat to ball skills with an 87% in zone contact rate. And similar a little bit to Seaver King, who we just hit on, there's zero issue with velo. He hammers fastballs. Against fastballs 92 plus, he hit 372. And then I think even if his defensive future is at first base or left field, two positions that aren't viewed totally as premium, I mean, the bat is going to be really hard to pass on for that long, I think. And I think regardless of where a team views him, where they stick him, it's a top 25, top 30 type, assuming he continues his production. So one of the more gaudy offensive profiles, I'd say, in the draft.
Yeah, I think I probably have a less positive view of him personally, just because a few of my in-person looks just weren't his best. But looking into his profile, seeing how he performs against each pitch type, how he handles velocity, it's not elite contact skills, but I think it's pretty solid considering the power production that he provides. He performed against fastballs. You mentioned the velocity he performed against well. I expected there to be a little more swing and miss against 92 plus. That wasn't the case. He handles secondary pitches, both breaking balls and off-speed offerings really well. There's not an obvious hole in the swing in terms of just the production that he's had so far. So I think I probably just need to try and discount my own personal looks where he didn't look like the player in my looks who went off, but I just need to trust the fact that pretty much everywhere else he was phenomenal. So it's kind of hard for me to throw out my like first look at him. But I really don't see an obvious hole in the offensive profile, and it seems like he's got more than enough power to profile nicely, even if he's going to stick at first base. Do you think he is one of these like lumbering first basemen that you're just sticking there because the bat is so good, or can he provide some value as a defender at the position, even if it's not a position you're looking to get gold glovers?
I mean, I think he's a fine defender. Like, he's not Nick Kurtz over there, which I don't think anyone is, but he's certainly not like an oafy, like heavy footed type guy. Like, there is a little bit of, I'd say, nimbleness and agility to his game.
Mm-hmm. So right now we have Charlie Condon at 18 overall. We have Tommy White at 6. How different do you view those profiles? Do you think they're a lot closer than the rankings might indicate in terms of overall value? Obviously, with Condon, you have 1 year. Tommy White's done it a few years and also had his high school track record. How do you view those profiles, like compare and contrast them?
That's a great question. And honestly, I think, you know, even if they end up both at first base, which I think that, you know, scouts and the decision makers are probably betting that's where they do both end up. I think White's bat is just that good that it has him up in the, you know, top 6 to top 10 range. So I think it's more just White's bat being that good.
Absolutely. All right. Anything else on Condon before we move on to our next player?
No, I think that in your look at USA, though, it's an interesting point, because I know that obviously contributing factor, everything's really a contributing factor to a player's draft stock, but wood bat track record and wood bat production is certainly one. He had a, again, it's a small sample, it was only 11 games, but he was pretty quiet on the Cape, hit 260 with 2 extra base hits. The K walk ratio was fine. It's never really been an issue for Condon, but just an interesting point.
Yeah, he's one that I definitely need to bear down a little bit more on in the spring, just to try and, I guess, add some more depth to my personal looks on him, because most of my work on Condon has been from afar, and the in-person looks just, and maybe it's a case of my expectations being sky high for a guy who had the sort of freshman season that he did. But again, as we're talking through him, like, it's a pretty complete offensive package with a lot of thump. So definitely one of the elite sluggers in this class. There are a lot of power hitting corner profile guys in this college class. And he seems like a pretty safe first rounder if he continues to do anything close to what he did last year. So let's move on to our first pitcher of the day. That is left-hander Hagen Smith out of Arkansas. We're beyond the draft eligible sophomores now. This will be his third year in college. He was a pretty prominent high school prospect who had Tommy John surgery, missed some of the summer showcase circuit entering his senior year, but he had a pretty phenomenal senior spring. He threw 7 no-hitters in his first 10 high school starts. I mean, you see some pretty gaudy high school statistics and performances from a lot of these players who are going to go play at the next level, but that's pretty loud, pretty impressive. I remember scouts just raving about him. He's always had pretty loud stuff, and I think there are always questions about, was he a starter? Was he a reliever? What are the strikes looking like with him? I would say he's been a bit of an effectively wild starter for Arkansas in his first 2 years. Solid performances, and I think he took a big step forward from 2022 to 2023. The ERA dropped about a run. It was a 4.66 ERA in 2022. Down to 3.64 in 2023. The average fastball velocity ticked up a bit year over year. I think he was sitting around 90, 91 miles per hour on average in 22. That jumped up to 93. He was more consistently in the mid-90s, touching upper 90s. He also upped the slider usage quite a bit, and I think the slider might be his best pitch. So that led to quite a bit more overall swing and miss in his game. The strikeout rate jumped from 25% to 35%, and largely the walks and the strikes overall stayed the same. So Hagen Smith, very electric left-handed pitcher, uncomfortable at bat, moving parts on the mound. Like all these pitchers in this class, though, how much are the reliever questions and the strikes gonna scare you moving forward? Peter, what are your thoughts on Hagen Smith?
Yeah, you know, the thinness on slam dunk starters in the class, as we work down the board, it becomes more and more apparent. I feel pretty confident in Smith's ability to start, even though last year he kind of split time between the bullpen and the rotation. I think it was just Arkansas using him wherever they, you know, I guess could maximize their production on the mound. They dealt with a ton of injuries last year. Missed a lot of pieces, but nonetheless, I think putting him you know, labeling him an effectively wild starter is a good assessment of him. The strike throwing did improve year over year from 22 to 23. The walks were down. The ERA dropped by a little bit more than a full run. He did throw, you know, six less innings, but that's splitting hairs at this point. He's a big kid. I know that Coach Hobbs at Arkansas, I heard an interview with him. He said that Smith put on a little bit more weight, like good weight, and is just built like an absolute house now in the best way, like super imposing on the mound. There's some natural funk in his delivery that I think helps his super impressive, already impressive arsenal play up. The fastball, as you mentioned, averaged almost 93 last year. He'll pitch in the 3-6 range. But I mean, this fall, it seems like his velo is taking another jump. We've heard, you know, in the last few weeks, it kind of made its rounds on Twitter, or I guess X, but his fastball has been up to 100. In 2023, it had an impressive 29% miss rate. And then I think the calling card is his hellacious mid to high 80s slider that is a borderline 70 in my book. 48% miss rate in 23, tons of sweeping action, really, really tough on left-handed hitters. He'll release it almost behind them, and then it'll end up in the right-handed hitter's batter's box at times. And he's got enough feel for the pitch where he's able to manipulate the shape really well, and he'll make it more vertical against right-handed hitters. And then kind of circling back a little bit to the point about, you know, how confident are you in his ability to start? I'd say the changeup right now is on track to be the most viable third option, but he flashed it in 23, threw it 7% of the time. It was in the high 80s. It had some nice tumbling action. It could be a plus pitch down the road. And then he's also thrown a cutter, which is really just a shorter version of his slider. So I'm pretty confident relatively in Smith's ability to start. I think that, you know, after splitting time between the bullpen and the rotation last year, he'll be the headliner. He'll be the Friday guy for Arkansas this year. I don't see how you can not have him be your guy going forward, which is, I think, the plan. So I expect a pretty big year for Smith.
Mm. Yeah, the changeup is interesting because kind of looking at the year-over-year pitch usage, he used it about 13% of the time in 2022, then knocked that down to 7% in 2023. It's never surprising to me when college players, especially college players who have such nasty secondaries like Hagen Smith does in his slider, like, it doesn't surprise me that you don't throw the changeup too often, because you're a left-handed pitcher throwing in the mid-90s with that sort of breaking ball. Using a changeup, even if you have a solid one, is probably just giving hitters a better chance to get on base against you more than anything. So it's understandable to me in that sort of environment where you're really focused on winning. But I am curious in how that pitch evolves for him. It seems like he's got the least feel of it compared to all the pitches that he's throwing currently, which makes sense. It's a feel pitch. It's kind of a fringy or below average control pitcher overall. And he's throwing the fastball and slider much more often. So you get locked in with those pitches. He threw it for strikes less than half the time. I mean, I don't think he would have to use a changeup a ton to succeed in a starting role, but I feel like at the next level, when you're going to have right-handed hitters who are going to be more capable of at least taking competitive swings against that slider, just having a reliable third offering that's moving away from a right-handed pitcher would make me feel a little bit more confident. I think even more than the changeup, though, I would like to see him take a step forward with the strikes and with the command. If he can be more precise with his fastball in the zone, just have some easier innings, not get the pitch count up so high, I think that would be really encouraging for me, because this is a player that I would love to have in a starting role. But like, basically all but like three pitchers I can think of at the top of this college class, I'm skeptical of it because the strikes have always been erratic. But that's the one area, like I would much rather him come out and show a 8-10% walk rate than a fastball that's sitting 95 plus. Like, I know he can throw hard. I want to see how effectively he can actually pitch.
Yeah, it's an interesting debate for sure, because looking a little bit further down the board, in a little bit of a foreshadowing to next week, like comparing him and like a Jonathan Santucci or even like a Cam Caminiti, It's an interesting kind of debate. And then also when looking at him with the arms up at the top, I know Brecht obviously might have the most electric stuff in all of college baseball. And then Caglione again is the two-way talent, but there's certainly starter risk up there, especially with Caglione. I think Burns maybe a little bit less so, especially now with him being away. But like comparing him to Brecht and Caglione is a really interesting debate, especially if a team views Caglione as a PO, even though I think he's going to get the chance to do both no matter what. But
yeah,
just an interesting little wrinkle.
Yeah, man, this pitching crop does just not exude a lot of confidence that we're going to get a ton of starters. But, you know, we were down on the 2019 pitching class in college at the time, and it looks pretty good so far. But still, we don't have a George Kirby in this class that I'm aware of. Maybe we do, and he's hiding somewhere, and he's going to pop up next spring. But as of now, not aware of that player. Any final comments on Hagen Smith before we move on to our last player and our only high school player?
Yeah, I mean, I think as far as the strike throwing goes, I'm with you that I'd like to see the continued progression. In that same interview with Coach Hobbs, where he had mentioned the, the 100 mile an hour fastball and the 99 mile an hour fastball, he mentioned that he was attacking the zone a lot more, was in and around the strike zone, making a lot more competitive pitches. So if he can carry that over from the fall to the spring, I think it's gonna put a lot of people's minds at ease and it only help his draft stock. And then I'm with you in the development of a third pitch, even though he's got really advanced feel for his slider and probably the best feel of his arsenal. That's the pitch he's got the best feel for. I think it's going to be key to develop a viable third offering, because whether you pitch in, no matter where you pitch in college baseball or where you play, there's still a pretty big gap between the SEC, Big 12, ACC and professional baseball. Like, professional hitters can put wood on a bullet. They can put a good swing on your best breaking ball. So I think it's really important for him, you know, to remain a starter, to continue to refine that changeup or cutter or whatever he decides is his best bet going forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Nope. Another fun one to watch. Again, we talk about this class a lot. There are a lot of question marks, but in some ways that makes the spring even more exciting. You can see who addresses their weaknesses, who takes a step forward, who doesn't. So plenty of things to look out for on the college side. But for our final player on today's episode, we're going back to the prep ranks. We are going to talk about Harvard Westlake High, the powerhouse, another powerhouse, SoCal high school program at Harvard Westlake. That's Bryce Rayner, both a shortstop and a right-handed pitcher. There are a number of two-way players in this class. We've already talked about a number of them in this podcast series: Jack Caglione, Connor Griffin, Braden Montgomery. There are plenty more to talk through. Bryce Rayner is another one of them that I think has legitimate upside at the next level and in pro ball as a hitter or as a pitcher. He has hit more frequently in his high school career, but just the flashes that he's shown on the mound. And again, I have shorter looks on these players than a lot of the scouts who've been watching these guys throughout their entire career. But watching him at the area code games, you see a big bodied kid. I mean, he's listed at 6'4", 195 pounds. It's a great frame, a lot of projection. He has solid actions defensively with a big arm. I think he has a solid approach at the plate. He was willing to take a walk, but didn't see a ton of impact in these looks. I know he's got power in the tank, but it wasn't maybe the most electric offensive showing, but he stepped on the mound and threw one inning at area codes, and it was such an easy 95-96 with this hammer curveball that he spun well, he located well, and it was like a very quick, I think it was a 1-2-3 inning if I'm remembering it correctly. But it was extremely loud. And I know leaving that event, there were a lot of scouts who were super intrigued with him as a pitcher, more so than as a hitter. I might be in that camp. I'd like to see him throw some more, but man, it's just so easy on the mound. He's so athletic. Harvard Westlake had Jack Flaherty a number of years ago, and I'd heard some people compare Bryce Rayner to Flaherty. And if you look at Jack Flaherty's draft profile, or his scouting report as a high schooler, there are a lot of similarities there. So I think that's a fun comp. It's the same school, shortstop, right-handed pitcher. But I really like Bryce Rayner just in general as a prospect, but especially as a pitcher.
So I'm glad you brought up the pitching, because in digging in on him in the last couple of days, I almost like him better as a pitcher than I do a hitter.
Well, welcome to the camp. Let's go, Peter. I love it.
All right, sweet. I know he hit well at area code. I think it was 375 with a triple. He looks good in the box, obviously. It's a it's a big league body, 6'4", 195. Good-looking athlete at shortstop where he's easily got a plus arm. I just am really unsure of the pure hit tool. I know at area code it was a nice little taste, but in just looking at what he did, at least what was on Synergy with, you know, the Canes and then Team USA, there wasn't a whole lot of production there. And that's, you know, I'm not trying to knock him or anything, but there just wasn't I wouldn't say it was the best circuit for Rayner. But
he felt like he always was taking really advanced at bats. He always looked comfortable in the box. He would get on base a decent amount. But even at that area code's performance where the results were solid, and I think he had more walks than strikeouts, there's just more swing and miss than I was expecting. And I think that's probably his biggest question mark offensively, but I'll let you continue with what you saw with him.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I think the bat to ball skills are a little bit questionable, but it is a smooth left-handed stroke. When he barrels it up, it jumps off his bat pretty easily. But I'm just not super bullish on the hit tool, but I am extremely bullish with him on the mound. Exceptional athlete, super fast, loose arm. As you said, you caught him live, but at least in the video, fastball up to 95, 96 with some arm side run. Little, not like a ton of effort in the delivery, and then, you know, a hammer high 70s curveball with a ton of depth, sharp downward bite. I mean, like, I think that it profiles, at least in the future, as a 70 type pitch. I'm that high on him in the mound. I think that the velo could continue to even tick up even further, or even more. I can't really say enough about how excited I am with the prospects of him being a pitcher long-term.
Okay. So I'm glad you're on the same page with me here. I'm sure people who have seen him a lot as an underclassman where he really focused on hitting more than pitching are probably really in on him as a hitter. And I think this is a player that you kind of let do both until he clearly proves that one is a significantly better avenue for him moving forward, because even though maybe it's not like the best pure contact skills, I think the actions defensively are more than enough for him to stick on the left side of the infield. It seems like shortstop, third base, could have some questions there just depending on how the body develops, but he's got more than enough arm for the left side. I think he has reliable hands there. He can throw on the run. He can move laterally enough to stick there and be a solid average defender, probably above average at third base. So there's enough in the tank, and it's a left-handed hitter with power. You expect the power to kind of continue developing as he adds more strength. So I wouldn't write him off as a hitter by any means. But if I had to pick one today, I probably would take the arm, because I just think it is that electric. I think it's that easy. And with all these two-way players, once they focus on one side, I think there's a lot of steps forward they can take. And just the way he moves, how easy it is, the athlete on the mound – I mean, the ease with which he was throwing 95, 96 was pretty special. And then he also broke out this hammer breaking ball that you mentioned. It was just very exciting, I would say, when he was on the mound. So I'm curious how much he's actually going to throw this spring, because he has just focused on hitting at times in his Harvard-Westlake career. But I talked to some people who saw him as a freshman, and they said he was one of the more impressive freshman pitchers they'd seen in years. So I do wonder how much he wants to hit and play every day versus pitch, because it seems like that's just what he's focused on. But man, the scouting industry is going to try and get him on the mound, I imagine.
Oh, without a doubt. And I think, you know, as you said, he'll obviously hit this year at Harvard Westlake. It's going to be tough to take the bat out of his hands. I still think there is upside there, especially in terms of growing into more impact, more power. And you mentioned you're getting a guy that's a slam dunk to stick on the left side of the infield, whether that's at shortstop or third. The arm's going to play at either position. Good enough athlete, obviously, to handle shortstop. The actions are there. But, man, on the mound, watching the video, I was extremely, extremely excited about what he can be if, you know, eventually he decides to put the bat down and focus solely on pitching, because I mean, it's a pretty easy 95, 96. Mid to low three-quarter slot. Get some natural arm side run on it. There's life through the zone. And then, as you mentioned, that hammer breaking ball. And he moves super, super well. So could kind of go on and on about him on the mound. But I'm I'm very excited. I'm very excited to see how he looks this spring.
Yeah, absolutely. No, he'll be yet another fun one to watch and see what happens with him. Obviously, at Harvard Westlake, they play really great competition, so I think he'll be challenged both as a hitter and a pitcher, more so than your average high school player, and maybe you can take a little bit more from the performance there with him. So those are our five players. Say, yeah, no, go ahead.
I was going to say, just being at Harvard Westlake too, which is one of, if not the most notable, I'd say, high school powerhouses, he'll get tons of heat on him on both sides of the baseball, so it'll only benefit him that much more.
Yeah, it's super easy for scouts down there in Southern California to see Harvard Westlake. It's a lot of home games for those scouts. I'm not sure if Harvard Westlake is Trinity League or not. I know everyone talks about the Trinity League being the top league in the country, but regardless of if that's their actual league, they're playing a lot of elite teams every year, so no shortage of talent down there where they're playing. But those are our five players. Running through them again quickly, it was Malcolm Moore, Seaver King, Charlie Condon, Hagen Smith, Bryce Rayner. Let us know who your favorite of this group is, who you're high on, who you're low on, who you're more pessimistic on, what you like about these players, if you want to give us some feedback. Peter is Peter G. Flaherty on Twitter, and I'm Carlos A. Colazo on Twitter. You can find us there. Peter, anything you need to plug moving forward for the website, anything you're working on, anything you want listeners to know before we hop out of here?
Yeah, the freshman spotlights are going to continue tomorrow or today, depending on when you're listening to it. Tomorrow will be on North Carolina catcher Luke Stevenson, has had an excellent fall. Seems like he's the favorite to be the everyday backstop there for the Tar Heels. So he's an exciting player that I'm excited to write about. And then obviously going forward, the National League top 10s will start to roll out next week, starting Monday, November 6th. And they'll roll all the way through Thanksgiving or the week after Thanksgiving. So a lot of fun times ahead. And then I think in the interim, at least the week of November 13th, I think it is, somewhere in there, I'll have a ranking of the top 10, 15, maybe 20 freshmen with all of their write-ups. So excited to dive into that too.
Nice. Yeah, it's been fun to follow those. I think for me, just finished up our high school standouts series from the summer and fall showcases. So basically 100 notable players. If you read all four parts, it's a lot of words on a lot of players that stood out or are notable prospects in general, just given what they had done entering the summer. So that's done for me. Finally, I think the next up is focusing on some prospect handbook work. And then on the draft side, at some point, I know they're going to be hammering us to update these draft lists, so that'll be coming as well. There's a lot of information that is actionable to kind of get these lists more up to date and give you a live look at of how the industry is seeing these players in the 2024 class. So that's next up for me in terms of Baseball America. There's a ton going on the site outside of what me and Peter are doing. Top 10 should start rolling out on the site in the very near future. So if you're looking forward to updated top 10s for big league teams and minor league prospects, that is on the way. And if you haven't ordered your prospect handbook yet, I would do so now. You can pre-order. I think you get a deal if you go directly through us. So if you know that's something you want to do, head over to the website and check that out now. But otherwise, thank you guys for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us. For Peter, I'm Carlos. We'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.